Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine. My guest this morning is Dr. Chris Centeno. He trained at Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Medical Center, and the Institute for Rehabilitation Research. He hails from both Florida and New York and currently resides in Boulder, Colorado with his wife and three children. And he has a practice there where he does some very innovative research and treatments for joint problems. Welcome, Dr. Centeno.
Thanks, Ann, for having me on.
You're doing something that I don't think this listening audience has ever heard of, which is injecting adult stem cells into degenerated, unhappy tissues, joints, ligaments, muscles, tendons, and having them heal up. And I've seen MRIs of befores and afters, and it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, we've been doing that now since about 2005, so for about six to seven years, have seen some really great results. It's certainly a new promising tool in the toolbox to try to help people prevent surgery.
This work is where joint replacement surgery is going to become unnecessary. This will replace it, and I think it has a lot more applications than even just joint rehabilitation. It probably has applications for organs and pretty much whatever's wrong with us.
I think so. I think that's where all this is headed.
Right.
I think in the next 30 years, for instance, it would be very uncommon to rip someone's joint out and replace it with a metal prosthesis.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I mean, the side effects that you won't have, the disability, the infections, the other things that go along with this, the long rehab. You just have an injection and away you go.
Yeah, as an example, my co-authors and I were publishing a paper on this recently, and we looked at the Medicare database for 2008, and in 2008 alone, just in Medicare recipients, there were 5,000 deaths attributed to knee replacement. So that's kind of a staggering figure to think of. And if you looked at deaths plus serious complications, it was 17,500,
wow,
either deaths or 12,000 other people who had prolonged hospital stays, IV antibiotics, were treated for things like pulmonary embolus, things like that.
People have gotten fairly casual about a joint replacement, like no big deal. And those are pretty staggering statistics.
Yeah, I think people think of it as like going in and replacing a part in a car. And, I think for many patients, it is becoming more routine. And I don't think there's anything unsafe about the procedure. But certainly, if you could get rid of that mortality and morbidity, that would help a lot of people each year if you just replace that with an injection.
Right. Well, so let's go into your interest in this. How did you get interested in doing stem cell work?
I got into this because in 2005, there were some publications in animal models where you could create an artificial degenerated disc, for instance, in a rabbit. You could then inject cultured adult stem cells into the disc and recreate most of the disc inside of about 6 weeks. And that really captured my attention, so I got online and looked to see that there was a researcher in our neck of the woods in Colorado that was doing some of this work at one of the local universities. I contacted him, and we both decided that we would try to move this from a large animal model where it was being done, at that point mostly in joints, to human, and that took us about 2 years to successfully do under research-type studies. And then after that, we started treating patients. But it was just exciting to see, for someone who had treated a lot of backs through the years and managed these patients rather than fixing them, that it might be possible to regenerate a burnt-out disc.
And so then from that, you've been doing some clinical trials, right?
Yeah, we did about 2 years, and what ended up happening during that time was that the disc work turned out to be a lot harder to figure out than we thought, because regrettably these animal models that they were using were nothing like the real McCoy in patients. And we eventually did figure that out, but that really didn't happen until about 2009 or so. But by 2007, what we had successfully done was to translate some of the animal work being done in joints over to humans, and had to make some pretty substantial changes to get it to work. But in the end, the joints were working well, so we started treating patients with joint problems.
Now, didn't you start with hips?
We started with hips and knees primarily, mm-hmm. and we went through a couple of different types of techniques until we settled on one that was working well. So mostly hips and knees. We've treated a lot of other joints at this point, but still, because we started with hips and knees, we've treated more hips and knees than anything else.
A lot of people are probably wondering about how far along is this in the process of being accepted? You know, people think, okay, this sounds like it's experimental. Is it still at the experimental stage, or have you moved into investigational along the road to standard treatment for joint problems?
I think it's definitely firmly in investigational treatment. And as you know, what that means is that right at the experimental stage, there are literally thousands of animal models published now that show that you can do great things in orthopedics with these cells. We moved into that further preclinical experimental stage where we treated patients through an institutional review board and saw no problems with safety and saw good efficacy. And then we moved on to this investigational phase where we are now, where it's a new technique. And for instance, as a result, every single patient we treat gets entered into a tracking registry so that we can make sure that we know what's going on with them long term. We continue to publish on it. We've published a lot. We have a few more papers coming out. But I think we're in that investigational phase where it's accessible to patients, but it is new care. And as long as they recognize that it's new care, there still are a few unknowns, then it can be used with patients that have these problems, especially ones that are looking at really big surgeries and don't want to buy off on the risks of those surgeries.
So if a person is looking at this as a possibility, maybe they've got a bad hip or a bad knee, can they go to Medicare and say, I want to have stem cells instead of hip or knee replacement?
Not yet, although I will say this, that I think there's so much data being published right now in this. I think we are about 5 to 7 years away before a Medicare, a large insurer like Medicare, would cover this. So it is still a out-of-pocket procedure right now, but I think that is coming. I mean, again, there's so much information being published that I think it's just a matter of time before that threshold gets crossed.
Well, I know one of the things that we look at in the chiropractic board, looking at moving something from investigational to standard, is safety. And certainly in this case, we're looking at an incredible improvement in safety outcomes.
Absolutely.
That was something that will ameliorate the fact that it's new. And I think there's probably a fair amount of resistance among orthopedic surgeons, neurosurgeons, who don't want to change what they're doing.
Well, certainly there is that. I think we see, for instance, orthopedic surgeons kind of going into two groups. There's a group which maybe represents about half of the ones we've come in contact with who attend conferences regularly, and they kind of see from all the information being presented about stem cells at their conferences that this is coming down the pike. And so they're trying to see how can I get involved in this and how is it going to change my practice? I know it's coming. And yeah, I think about half of them are more entrenched in saying, you know, I don't want to deal with this right now. I'm more established in my practice and I don't really need anyone coming by and upsetting the apple cart. But I do think that most of them, you know, I think we'll see lots of things happening in the future. We'll see surgeries done with stem cells. We'll see stem cells replacing some surgeries, but it'll probably be a mix of both.
Right, right. Well, I'm sure that one size will never fit all. Okay, so let's talk about this. People may not even know, like, okay, where do you get the stem cells? Are they embryonic? Where do they come from? They're adult cells, so, like, what does that mean?
So what that means is they're not embryonic, so they're not taken from an embryo. They're your own cells. There are adult stem cells throughout your body. we can take them either from your bone marrow or a fat tissue, adipose tissue. The bone marrow ones tend to work better in orthopedics, so we tend to use those more for orthopedic purposes. And then we can either just isolate them and inject them the same day, or we can culture them to bigger numbers to get more.
And what would be preferable? I mean, a bigger joint, you need more cells?
Yeah, a bigger joint and more damage. So as an example, mm-hmm. if someone has a very severely degenerated joint, our research that we are just getting published now shows that if we culture the cells, the severity of the joint is independent of the outcome, meaning that the more severe joints don't do more poorly than the less severe joints. Likely different if we're just taking them out and placing them back in, meaning you probably are more sensitive to things like severity of the disease. So a more severe joint is probably not going to do as well if you're just taking some out and putting them back into the joint.
Okay, so when somebody has this procedure, and whether they're cultured or the same day, what do they feel like, and then how do they know if they're better?
So what we would do is take them out, whether we culture them or not. We'll place them back in using very specific X-ray or ultrasound guidance into the specific area. And then usually what patients will experience is somewhere in that first 4 to 8 weeks is when they'll get a result. Now, depending on the kind of treatment we're doing, they may need a repeat treatment at 6 to 8 weeks later, or they may not. But that's usually the time frame where patients start to notice the biggest changes. There are times when we re-MRI the area. There are times because of insurance reasons it's difficult to do. Insurance companies these days are getting pretty stingy on some of the re-follow-up MRIs. It seems like this year, more so than last, they're putting more restrictions on those things. But that's generally what we'll do, is we'll rely on the patient's pain and function for the most part to let us know that we're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. And how does it feel either getting the stem cells harvested and injected into the joint?
Yeah, so getting them harvested is interesting. When we're taking a bone marrow aspirate, most people think of a bone marrow biopsy. So a bone marrow biopsy is where you actually go in and take a structural piece out of the bone marrow. This is an aspirate, so it's very different. So we just numb up the skin and the soft tissues. The patient may feel, we take a needle then, and believe it or not, bone is really not like hard cement. It's more like plastic, so you can actually poke a needle through it. And then we'll pull out a bone marrow sample, which looks like a little bit like thick blood, and that's what's sent off to the lab. As far as putting them back in, that would be more like a routine injection. There are some special devices that we have developed and are developing to, for instance, make some of those things better. For instance, improving our ability to target certain areas inside a joint through a needle. Those are things that have never really been done before, because up until now, it's only been medications. So, as long as you get the medication somewhere in the joint, you're fine. Whereas with stem cells, where they go in the joint really can affect the results. So we have to now develop new tools to get things through into a specific part of the joint rather than just generally inside the joint someplace.
Right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. We're back. You're listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Dr. Chris Centeno, who is an international expert and specialist in regenerative medicine. And we're talking about the use of adult stem cells in regenerating joints. So when we left off, we were talking about putting a needle in, and I know people want to know, well, how much does it hurt?
Yeah, so it's you're not going to feel too much more than you would with an average injection.
So you numb it up first, the skin?
We do. We numb up the area as best we can. One of the things we're experimenting with now is we know that we can't, for instance, get local anesthetics in contact with the cells, commercial local anesthetics, but we're experimenting with some newer anesthetics that still numb the joint but can come in contact with the cells. But, yeah, we numb up the soft tissues. I think the average patient wouldn't notice too much different between this type of procedure and the average injection they would go to a doctor and get in their family doctor's office.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are getting steroidal injections in all kinds of joints in their doctor's offices. So this feels like that, or maybe not quite as bad as that?
It would feel similar to that. Uh-huh. Our biggest concern with steroids and anesthetics is that they tend to kill cartilage. And so if someone is considering getting a steroid and anesthetic injection in a joint, we try to avoid that because there's now a lot of research showing that especially the combination of those two, high-dose steroid plus an anesthetic, can hurt the cartilage. But as far as how it feels, I think the average patient wouldn't notice much different between the average joint injection they would get and what we do.
I think we better back up because I don't think that most of the people that just heard that are going to believe their ears, that their doctor is giving them something that's killing their cartilage, which, of course, is going to accelerate degeneration. That's not what they want at all. They want to not hurt and be functional and play tennis or whatever it is that they want to do.
Yeah, in fact, there's a huge class action right now regarding a anesthetic pain pump in the shoulder, where they discover that putting prolonged, even just anesthetics into a joint over a prolonged basis of maybe a day or so to provide relief for someone getting shoulder surgery was destroying so much cartilage that they had young people showing up months later with no cartilage in the joint. There's another study that just came out that showed that the long-acting anesthetic Marcaine reduce the number of cartilage cells in a joint after 6 months up to 50%. Lots of information out there showing that putting local anesthetics plus a steroid into a joint, not a good thing. And they're potent anti-inflammatories. They work well for a couple months, but lots of information showing that after that couple months, the joint's going to be worse off than it was before you started.
And does that apply to steroids as well? That's also the cartilage killing?
Steroids are also in that same category. And for some reason, when you add steroids and a local anesthetic, which is the most common injection, the effects you get are synergistic, meaning that 1 + 1 = 3 in hurting the cartilage.
Right, you have an additive effect.
Yeah, so more than additive, meaning that, you know, let's say if the example was you add steroid and it takes out 10% of the cartilage cells, and you add anesthetic and it takes away 30%. Mm. Adding them together doesn't give you 40% cartilage death; it gives you 60%. So they somehow act to one acts to magnify the effects of the other.
That's horrible. I just think people aren't aware of that. So if people want to have more information about this, you've got a great website, and maybe we should talk about the Regenix, what that is, because they might see that and go, what is that?
Yeah. So what we've tried to do is just to we put together Regenix, so it's regenxx.com website that goes over the different types of procedures. There's a daily blog that comes out that goes over everything from patient results, any publications we have, scientific presentations that we do, interesting information for people that have cartilage problems, scientific information about what supplements they may want to look at taking, the most recent research of what type of exercise, for instance, tends to help reduce patellofemoral pain. I mean, all those sorts of things that you might find on a health website. And our goal there is to act as a central repository for information for patients. So it's Regenix, regenx.com. The other thing we'll do is we try to get on the phone with each patient, look at all their information, and if you're coming from far away in particular, we'll put you into a good, fair, or poor category for the procedure before you come out. And we tend to really be very honest with patients up front. If we think you're in the poor category for this type of procedure, we'll let you know that. That doesn't mean we don't have some people that decide to come out anyway, but at least they know what their expectations are. And then if it does work well, obviously everyone's pleasantly surprised rather than being upset that it, you know, they weren't told they were not a good candidate for this.
So how do you decide who is a good moderate or a poor candidate? What are the factors?
So there are a number of different things we look at. The first is the severity in the joint. If we're doing a cultured procedure, that tends to be not as big a deal. But if we're doing a same-day procedure, that is a bigger deal, meaning it does tend to follow that severe joints respond less often than mild joints, mild arthritic joints. The other thing we'll look at is lifestyle factors. So a patient on a lot of medications, for instance, we've seen is less likely to be able to culture their stem cells and grow more. So we always have concerns when we see patients on a lot of prescription medications. There are certain ones we've learned through the years that do impact their stem cells. Weight and diet and exercise, it is generally true from what we see clinically that healthier patients that take better care of themselves tend to do better with this kind of procedure that relies on the strength and the health of adult stem cells to work.
That makes sense. And so those are the big factors. Now, if a person's going to have, if they have a badly degenerated joint and they need to have them cultured, how long does it take to culture them?
Just a few weeks. So it takes about 2 weeks to culture them to bigger numbers. And those are also then sent for some testing. So it may be 3-4 weeks before we get them back into the patient, but they grow in culture for about 2 weeks.
Okay, so that means then if the person's flying from some other part, they go, they have their stem cells harvested, they go home, and then when they're ready, they come back.
Correct. That's definitely one way to do it. The other thing we're working on now is establishing some relationships with some local clinics where we can have them pull the bone marrow sample. And we can culture the cells and then meet the patient back up with their cultured cells. So we're working on trying to get that established so it's a little bit easier on patients that are coming in from out of town.
Oh, is the harvesting something that most doctors could do?
They'd have to be trained. So that's what we're trying to do now is to train them so that they can take a good sample. And they have to have some sort of imaging guidance, whether that be ultrasound or x-ray, because there's some very specific spots we want them to tap to take cells.
Yeah, I could see that would really bring the cost down if the patient only needs to fly down to have the injection.
That and, you know, working on lots of other things like that, trying to make it easier on patients so there's not as much travel.
Well, when I talk about this with patients, they always say, well, who's doing this in Oregon? And I say, I don't think anyone. There are some related procedures happening in Oregon, which I don't think we should go into right now, but they're not the same and they don't seem to have near the results.
Yeah, platelet-rich plasma is probably the most common. Doesn't tend to work as well for more moderate and severe arthritic joints. It does work well in mild arthritis, but regrettably, most of the people that show up to your office for something like platelet-rich plasma probably don't have mild arthritis. They're probably more in the moderate to severe range. That's why they're investigating it.
Right. They're having trouble walking, or they're having trouble using that joint. It's badly damaged.
And they've been told usually by a surgeon that they're a joint replacement candidate. So they're starting now to look for other options. And platelet-rich plasma doesn't appear to work as well for those categories, but it does work well in a more mildly arthritic joint. So if you're in that more rare category of catching it early, then that is something that you might look at.
That's great. Okay, well, boy, there are so many things we could talk about. Are you planning to be in the Northwest? Are there any conferences where you're going to be in this part of the country?
Not anytime soon. Let's see. I'm going to Sweden next week to do some lecturing, and then I've actually got a lecture at the Vatican in Rome in November, and then in Wisconsin in October. So I don't have anything happening in the Northwest. We are talking to physicians all the time, trying to teach them how to do some of the same day procedures that are easier to do.
You've got some webinars for doctors?
We do. We're trying to get that education out there. Haven't really talked to anyone yet in your neck of the woods, but I'm sure that'll happen. We also do have a monthly webinar for patients. We have one actually this Wednesday where they can get on line and they can go hear me sort of go through all the information, ask questions. We find that that's helpful because, you know, after 20 minutes of questions, I think most people have gotten all the answers they need, just hearing either their own or other people's questions about the procedure.
And how often do those happen? Those patient once a month?
Yeah, about once a month.
And they can see those on your website?
They can. Those are on the website. You can sign up on the website, and you can literally do it in your web browser and get on the phone and dial into a number. And it seems to work very well for patients. They can just chat in their questions.
That's great. It's been great talking to you, and I'd like to end for right now. You've been listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine. I've been with Dr. Chris Centeno.